a paper way and a digital way, and I want to talk about the differences there. And obviously, there are limitations to both that are real, right? The paper way, you can get lost. The digital way, you have to have a phone. And so you got questions of social equity and things like that that need to be engaged. Not everybody has it, right? On the other hand, there is this very, very real misconception by people that what happens in Florida, what happens in Texas, and what happens in California are funneling into some central place that everybody can see. Had a conversation about this on social media yesterday, where one person said, look at VAMS. Another person said, look at VSafe. A third person said, look at their state registry. A fourth person, I think, said, you know, the hospital's, actually did say, the hospital's electronic health record has a copy. So, but okay, but if you go across town to the other hospital, they don't have access to that. So,
well, and we're not a hospital. And so we don't, agreed. We don't have you as a patient on an electronic health registry.
Well, again, even so, like if you go, if you go from Stanford to Kaiser Permanente, or you mentioned Pennsylvania, right? If you go from Jefferson to Penn, or from Allegheny Health to UPMC, they don't share information across their EHRs. So even if you were there or at the county, they don't see each other. So take me, let's go back to sort of how this process started for you. Take me through your experience. It's around November-ish, right? People are starting to talk about the first vaccine. In fact, I think it was right around the election, right? That the vaccine is starting to come online. People are talking about needing to get ready. Kind of walk me through what the process was for you to start to understand what you were going to be asked to do. And then what were you given as far as guidance, as far as access, as far as systems? Take me into your world on a granular level.
So I got an email Friday from a neighboring department that said, hey, we wanted to do COVID vaccines for our people too, like you guys are doing. Can you give me the people I need to order it from? And I just kind of chuckled, and I emailed back and I said, well, it's not quite that simple, but I will be happy to send you all the information and help you go through the process on how to do it. For Texas, we started this probably right around the middle of December, right when they announced that the vaccines were going to be starting. Had a application to fill out, but in order to fill out the application, you had to have certain criteria. So luckily, before we went and spent like $4,000 on a vaccine refrigerator, because everybody was worried about the ultra cold requirements for Pfizer and the frozen requirements for Moderna and all that other stuff, I decided to call the state, and they had some hotlines, and they were great with answering questions. Their emails were returned within the same day. Awesome. So I mean, as far as the response on that end with answering questions and getting the ball rolling with this, they've been very responsive. So I will give them that much. But they basically, I said, so what kind of storage requirements do I need? And they said, well, you just need a regular refrigerator. I said, so I don't need like a freezer or any. And she said, no, because they told us how the Pfizer would be shipped, that it would be in a container and everything. And that's kind of self-contained for a certain amount of time. We ended up finding out that the Moderna vaccine doesn't even need to be frozen once it gets here, because as long as you use it within 30 days, which the state requires that you use your vaccine allotment within a week. So we can keep it refrigerated up to 30 days. But the kicker was you needed to have a Wi-Fi data logger to record your temperatures. So in order to be able to even fill out the application, you had to physically have that equipment in hand, because you needed to upload your calibration certificate. You need to put serial numbers and all that kind of stuff into the application. Well, of course, as that information started to get out there, trying to purchase a Wi-Fi data logger was trying to like purchase N95s back in March of last year.
Yep.
So we had about I found one that was a 2-week back order that was the best I could get. So we got our first equipment in the beginning of January. As soon as we got it in, filled it out, got our application approved within 2 weeks. And then we put our first order in. What wasn't initially communicated, that they've done a better job. They basically do weekly or sometimes twice weekly webinars that they post up on the DSHS website that anybody can access. So anybody, you don't need to have access. You don't need to be a vaccine provider to access. You just need to know where to go to get it. But they have the PowerPoints as well as the actual video recordings of the webinars that they have on there. And we realized that we put our first order in and we didn't get it. But that once you have to order every week. Because when you put that order in that week, if they don't process your order for the following week, then that order just kind of disappears in the system and you have to continually reorder. So once we realized that and we started putting our orders in, then that's how we ended up getting our first allotment. Now we ordered 500 doses, we were allotted 200. And you know, when you fill out your application, you have to put a lot of demographic data in. So they do allocate the doses. Obviously, Harris County Public Health or City of Houston would be eligible for much more than what we would get because they have a larger demographic area that they're covering than we are.
Sure. The cases where people are moving around, you know, someone shows up to your table, tells you who they are, and they've registered for something. And so you have to validate them. And maybe they've come from another department. Maybe they're a first responder. You know, we talked a little bit about before this, about your experience being identified professionally in the registry. So kind of walk me through how you learned what you're supposed to do. And then as you're going through that process, what's it like to enter a person's name to receive a registration and then have to go put that into ImTrack and find the person there to validate that Joe Cassiotti got his shot. Let's get a little detail there. Because I think this is the part that most people I don't think understand, right? This is where it seems like magic that I sort of course I find Joe and I know everything about him. And then you get on the ground and it's a little more complicated than that, shall we say.
Right. So as far as learning how the process works, I did a lot of webinar watching. I did a lot of PowerPoint reading and rereading, and I asked a lot of questions. You have to be very precise, and you have to be very, you have to look for the data. You have to look for the information. It's
proactive,
not, I don't want to say, proactive. That's the word I'm looking for. I wouldn't say that it's not, that it's difficult to find. I mean, they make it very easy to find it, but you have to really go searching out for if you want to do things the right way. I mean, they have the resources on the state website and in those webinars for Moderna and Pfizer, and I'm sure now they have the Johnson & Johnson one in there, how to administer it, how to store it, what are your temperature excursions, you know, the instructions on how to do everything. And like I said, the phone lines and the emails that they have available whenever I've had questions, I've gotten through same day. I've gotten emails back same day, usually within a few hours of my first one. So as far as that, with the resources, they're very responsive. And you brought up a pretty interesting thing about people moving around. I have a little more information on that for you and when we get to it.
Yep.
And that it just blows my mind that I got the answer I got. But anyway.
Better or worse, now I'm intrigued.
So the problem with entering the information in ImTrack is like you're not entering that information in real time because it's not, even though they've done a quicker version of entering the information in, if we would have to go and enter the information in the old way, it would probably take me at least 3 to 4 minutes per person.
Tell me what the old way is. So old way and then new way and sort of how we got there.
Well, I mean, going in and just entering all the.
By the way, old way is like a month ago, right? I mean, we're not talking like years ago.
Well, yeah, no, we're just talking about going in and, because I mean, the ImTrack system was designed for pediatric immunizations, so you know it wasn't designed for putting hundreds or thousands of people through a mass vaccination clinic or you know things like that. So they've done a rapid entry thing where you only have to put a few data points in, and it'll search the system for that person. The problem that I was running into was that it was searching the system and a pretty consistent 5% of the time, it would bring up somebody that had similar information, but not exactly the same information.
Like what?
So for instance, the first one that it flagged and the reason I caught it, and honestly, had this person not already gotten a COVID vaccine somewhere else, I wouldn't have even caught it. It was the same first name and the same last name. The birth month and the birth day were the same, but the year was different by 4 years. So it was 1954 versus 1958. I didn't catch the birth year. I saw the name. I saw 730. I saw 19. And I just didn't catch it.
So this was the same, to be clear, this was the same person. Same name.
Same exact first name spelling, same exact last name spelling. Same birth month, same birthday, but a different birth year.
So we're talking John Smith, born on February 1st in two different years. Is it two people where the system, where you basically got unlucky, or is there seem to be a problem where it's finding the wrong information for the same person in two different dates.
Well, so that's a good question. So did somebody else enter that person previously and put the wrong birth year in? Or now I compared, it also brought up the person's address, and the address at the time of the entry was an address that was up in Dallas somewhere. Now, it doesn't mean that that person didn't used to live in Dallas and now they live in the Houston area, but you know, I entered it as a different person because to me that didn't make sense because the data didn't match up 100%.
But you didn't get any kind of, even before we move on to sort of how you deal with that and whether putting them in as a second, now you have two people in the registry. So there's a separate problem there. But when you see that, if you didn't catch it, what would happen? And when you did catch it, what did you think?
So what would happen if once I entered the information and it popped up and said, hey, this person's already in the system, and I clicked on it, said, okay, great. I clicked on it and I went to the vaccine entry part, because first you put in the demographics and then the next page is vaccine date, version of vaccine, a lot number, and then you proceed from there. As soon as I got to that entry page, it popped up that they had already received two doses of Pfizer, the Pfizer COVID vaccine.
Okay.
So I was like, wait a minute, that can't be right. So then I went back and then I started really looking at all the data. And then that's when I caught the year discrepancy.
I've done some writing on the subject of false positive versus false negatives, right? And imagining a situation where a person, and I think you mentioned to me that you yourself had this situation, right? Where you looked yourself up and found that the system didn't think you'd had a second shot. And so you may end up getting a third vaccine, right? Because the system is saying someone needs to follow up with you. And so for whatever reason, you get it. But imagining a situation where because of a typo, you end up with someone being checked off as having had the second vaccine when they didn't. So now they have a lesser degree of protection from the first one. And now you end up with a false negative problem in your community, where people are going around less protected because the system said they already received it, therefore they now can't get anybody who's willing to give them another one.
Part of the process for Texas for getting your second dose allotment for Moderna and Pfizer is that you have to enter the individuals that you did the first dose with into ImTrack. So if I had given my 200 whatever doses of Moderna this weekend and I had entered nobody into ImTrack, and 4 weeks from now I was expecting to get another allotment for their second dose, I wouldn't receive anything because they would still show that I still had 200 doses available.
When we look at that,
so there's a bunch of problems here. So the first one is you have to enter the first dose of the vaccine to get your second dose. There is no incentive for you to enter the second dose in a timely manner. So I received my second Moderna dose on January 27th. When I looked last week, so it had been a month since I received that dose, my records still show that I had only received one dose of the Moderna vaccine and that I was overdue for the second dose. So there's not that incentive for the vaccine providers.
Okay.
Because they have to do the first dose in order to get the second dose allotment, but there's nothing that says that they have to get the second dose entered to get additional first dose allotments. Where this becomes an issue for me is, so let's say like I'm planning on going to Jamaica this summer with my family. My wife and I have both had both our doses of Moderna. So if they require a vaccine passport, an electronic passport, and they go off the ImTrack record, I will show that I only received one dose and I never received the second dose. And the only thing that I have to verify that to prove that I got it is the paper that I got from the place I got it at that has two doses written on it. But who are you going to believe? A paper that I could easily have had somebody fill out and written on there, or the electronic record from the state that's supposed to be accurate?
Even the process of fixing it going forward doesn't fix what's already happened.
Right.
And that's where I sort of find this gap that can only be filled by an enormous amount of elbow grease, right? Where, as you mentioned at the top of the talk, The elbow grease incentive is speed, not accuracy.
I've never done data entry as a job before. I mean, I've done it as part of a job, but I would expect that people are mostly paid on volume and not necessarily accuracy.
Well, I don't know what your accuracy would be. Again, I'm a technologist. This is my job, right?
Yeah, it's like how much info, you know, especially when you, so if you're saying, okay, I've got 10 people and you've got 24 hours to enter 4,000 records, you know, you're going to be trying to motor through those. So when you put somebody's information in and the system pops up and says, hey, this is a match, how close are you going to look at that information, especially when you quickly glance over it and it looks like it's a good enough match?
EMS deals with dirty data, right? We are the only aspect of the healthcare system. And when I say EMS, of course, I mean fire, mobile medicine in general, right? Where we deal regularly with the John and Jane Doe. You have to provide care for someone who may be altered mental, who may be, you know, passed out on the floor, who may, you know, may have gotten hit by a car. Who knows, right? Doesn't speak English, doesn't want to talk to you, doesn't trust you. Take your pick. And HIEs have ground to a halt in places around the import of data that they didn't take care to ensure was accurate because you didn't have a source of truth, right? And that's what health information exchange requires, is to be able to say Joe Cassiotti is different from Joseph Cassiotti, who's also different from Joseph P. Cassiotti, who's different from Joseph B. Cassiotti, right? And it's a very granular, in the weeds, detailed and technical process. It's not scan a barcode, right? It's not check an ID because you may be carrying someone else's wallet, or, you know, my wife is carrying my credit cards and now she's Jonathan, you know, right? So, and so now we're talking, all of that exists, but now you start to have conversations about the need for that to travel, to go to school, to buy a car, right? So like, it changes and it becomes political, but it also goes back to the question of science, right? And are we acknowledging what we don't know and saying we're going to have to solve it? I love that we kind of come full circle here. But you're in the midst of this because personally and also professionally, you're being tasked by your community to get it right. So How are you dealing with the fact that you have limitations?
Yeah, so the other piece of this too is the ultimate source for this would be some type of a national database that all of these systems talk to.
Right? Everyone thinks they have.
Right.
The public thinks it exists.
Which doesn't exist. And I'll give you a VSafe example here in a minute too, as a little bit of a problem there. But then you run into I don't want my information tracked in a national database. I don't want to provide my personal information. You're infringing upon my, you know, whatever. And just to go back to masks for a second, I have to say this because this is the thing that just drives me absolutely bonkers with the healthcare professionals is. So I saw somebody on social media that's a healthcare worker that said, you know, in regards to Governor Abbott's, you know, no more mask mandate. They said, you know, perfect. Let people make up their own mind. You know, I've known people that have worn masks and they've still gotten COVID, and I've known people that have never worn a mask and they've never gotten COVID. You know, if they want to wear a mask to protect themselves, they don't protect the person wearing them. They don't work that way. They never have worked that way. Nobody's ever said they work that way. The only way that a mask works is that the person who has COVID has it on, and it helps prevent the spread from that person to other people. So if you have a room with 10 people in it and 9 people have a mask on, and the one person that doesn't have it on is the one that has COVID, the other 9 people have a 70% chance to get COVID, even though they're wearing that mask 100% of the time. Yeah, this is just this whole misinformation stuff about, you know, nothing's 100%. I actually got a pretty hateful message from a former Facebook friend. By the way, I don't unfriend people on social media. I might unfollow you if you're kind of getting too much for me, but they sent me this pretty long graphic thing about how, you know, it says right on the box that it doesn't protect against this and that and the other. And, you know, for healthcare workers, I just say, well, think about surgery. you know, you wear a mask when you're a surgeon, not because you're afraid that the person you're operating on is going to give you something. It's so you don't get whatever you have in them. This is all an extension of where we started our discussion today. So yes, this is
I
all,
like we've gone full circle. I like.
This is all innovation in real time. This is all this is now we're coming back to the people are saying, well, of course there's this way to track this information accurately. I mean, there has to be, because
there has to be.
Why would they request this information, and why would they do this unless that existed? What most people don't know is that it doesn't exist. You know, they think it exists, they think it should exist, and they just assume that it exists, because most other times when things like this happen, we have the time to put that structure into place before we actually have to start doing things. Like you said, I think the analogy of building the plane while flying it is a perfect example. It's a perfect analogy of what we're dealing with here. You know, we're implementing systems as we are. What's the most important thing to do? Most important thing to do is get people vaccinated as quickly as possible. Well, how long is it going to take to build that system, build all these data collection systems, especially on a national level, when you have different states that are using something that already exists at the state level that may or may not be built for that purpose? So the VSafe example, the biggest problem with VSafe, and I commented, I know exactly what the Facebook post you're talking about, because I commented on there too. The biggest example is it's optional. It doesn't say that it's a mandatory thing. You're not automatically enrolled in it. So as soon as you make something optional, that cannot be considered a valid source of information, because you're not going to have everybody in. My VSafe example is, so I got a text message 2 weeks after I got my 2 weeks after I got my second vaccine from VSafe that said, hey, you're due for your second COVID vaccine. You might want to call your vaccine provider and schedule an appointment with them. Now, I had already received my second COVID vaccine 2 weeks before. Now, I knew I wasn't due for that, but this kind of stuff can be confusing for people. There's flaws in all these different systems. I think, and let me be clear, I think VSafe is great. I think it's a great data collection point for side effects. It gives us more data on what people are feeling in real time, and it gives a little bit of a safety net for people that if they are having something severe that they're not necessarily reporting elsewhere, that there's the potential for somebody to get in contact with them and see what's going on. And I encourage, and like I said in that post, I discuss it with everybody we give the vaccine to. I give them the form. I even help them if they're not real tech savvy and they have a phone, I help them download it. I show them how to do it. But again, you can't make people do it. I mean, I have people flat out go, nah, I'm not doing that. I'm not putting information in there.
The Apple Google contact tracing thing that people made a lot of, I mean, an enormous amount of deal about at the beginning of this. And I was banging my head against the wall to anybody who would listen to say, this is it's not even a joke. Like, it's a publicity stunt. It's a great publicity stunt for Apple and Google, but you have to get everybody to turn on their phone. And how many people are actually going to do that? And as soon as you stop having the requirement and the default is in the on position, you're not going to get any of this stuff that you think. And, you know, lo and behold, they shut it down or it kind of fizzled out. But I think the part that sort of kills me, and I'm going to push you a little bit on this, because I think you're one of the smartest people that I get a chance to talk to about these topics.
I want you to hold on one second. I just want to go back to the Apple and Google thing.
Yeah,
and
good.
I think Apple should have learned when they had so many people upset that they automatically downloaded a U2 album on their phone after a certain update that people didn't ask for, that they should have never done the contact tracing. But that's besides the point. But go ahead.
These issues are known to a degree, right? And I think you and a couple other people like Ron Nichols and Art Grew up in Vermont, you know, Ron Nichols at Chambers County and Art Grew in Vermont, and a lot of the folks who have been part of the Congress of Mobile Medical Professionals, so there's our plug for comp, but, you know, we have been having this conversation since November, December, right? Basically, are we ready, right? Victoria down in Florida, as a pharmacist, has been saying, are we dealing with the drugs, right? And Britt Leinberger in South Carolina, are we dealing with the temperature control issues with enough granularity that we're going to be ready? We've been asking a lot of questions. And some people have taken those questions to heart, other people haven't. But now I fear that we end up in a situation where we get to too big to fail, and yet we're failing faster, right? But we're not failing faster learning from the lesson, right? The doctor is saying, you know, stop doing this. And what we're saying is, I'm just going to do it faster and hope it gets better, because we're speeding up the problem. And we're seeing that as we build the plane, the engine, you know, it's pulling a United, leaving out of Denver, right?
Right.
And the engine's kind of hanging there. And instead of turning around, we're saying, well, we'll just get to Hawaii and then we'll fix it when we get there. As someone on the ground who's thought a lot about this, who's dealt with this, this is what we need to do next, right? You know, pause, take a breath. Let's think critically about what we're going to do. What would you change? What would you fix, right? What steps can we take that are concrete, that if somebody were going to say, I got $1.9 trillion to toss at the problem, how do I direct it so that I don't make it worse? I don't make it intractable with 10 years worth of implications, because we're still only at 7.8% of the population, right?
Right.
That's been duly vaccinated. We're not at 78% yet. So maybe we can still, as you say, scientific method, let's bring it back to the beginning, right? We can learn from what we're doing. We're far enough in that we have insights that are statistically significant, but we're not so in that we can't make a change and tweak the trajectory of our process. So what would you do? And that could be local, it could be technical, it could be order enter, I don't care what it is. What would be your advice to those who are going to look at this and say, you know, here's an expert opinion?
So I think they need to put all the stakeholders at the table, you know, and I don't mean just the big players. You need to get insight from the people that are dealing with the 200 vaccines and the people that are dealing with the 10,000 vaccines, because both sets of people are having the same problems. I just so happen to be the person that managed the program, administered the vaccines, and entered the data. So maybe the people that are managing these huge vaccine hubs don't even know that there's a data entry problem.
Okay.
You know, I think that if they were aware of some of the issues and how, what I think are some relatively simple tweaks that could be done to improve the quality of the data that we're collecting, I think that it would be very eye-opening for them. But I really don't think that they're aware of the problems. And I'll go back to an example that I've encountered. So when this all started, I was kind of issuing infection control guidelines based on the pandemic from my office for our crews out in the field. I wasn't necessarily, I mean, primarily I'm administrative, so I do patient care stuff occasionally, but not all the time. A couple months later, I found out that they're like, you know, we really haven't been doing this because of this, 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 and this. And I said, well, why would you not come and tell me about those issues, and why would you not come and tell me about a different way that you think it would be better? Because I didn't know that that was a problem, and if I would have known that that was a problem, we could have amended the way that we were doing it to make it easier for you to manage things and make it better for you. But I'll give you an example, a perfect example of another issue that we haven't even talked about that I identified that I pushed up. So I had, like you mentioned, I had a couple of firefighters from a neighboring department, as well as now a couple of community members who came to us. They said, hey, we saw you had Moderna vaccines. We had our first dose a month ago. Our second dose was supposed to be the week of the winter storm. Our appointment got canceled, got rearranged, whatever. We weren't able to go back to the original place that we got it at. So the way that the allocations work here is if you have a first dose allocation, those are for first doses only. You cannot mix first and second doses. As you can imagine, that would be a complete nightmare, trying to track first versus second and all that other stuff. It throws a whole other data set in there that you have to track, and it would just be a mess. So I said, well, I can't do that because these are expected to be first dose allocations, not second, and you have to go back to the original place. Another one that you brought up earlier, you know, and also on social media was, well, what if you move? You know, what if you get your first dose in Pennsylvania and move to Texas? Or What if you're in the same state? What if you get your first dose in Dallas and you move to Houston? And that's what happened with this other person. They were told by the original place, we'll contact the public health in the area that you're in. Well, that's not, they're not getting anywhere. So I emailed my contact at the state for these questions. And I said, hey, you know, this is a scenario I came across. What do I do to remedy this? Or what can I give them? And I was basically told, well, they need to contact the vaccine hub. These are the locations of the vaccine hubs. They need to contact the vaccine hub and see if they will be willing to do a second dose for them. Okay.
In the original location?
No. Just there's vaccine hubs throughout the state.
Okay.
That are identified as vaccine hubs. So I wasn't real satisfied with that answer. So I called the line and I talked to somebody and I said, look, I'm not really satisfied with this answer because this doesn't really give me an answer. It's basically, and they said, call around to other places, basically call pharmacies, call hospitals, call all these places and see if they can do it. And I said, well, my understanding is that if I get a first dose allocation, those all have to go to first doses. I cannot mix first and second. And they said, that's correct. So I will only get sent enough second doses to administer second doses to the people that I gave first doses to. And they said, that's correct. So if I don't have extras on the second doses and I can't give out first doses as second doses, how are these people going to find that anywhere else? Because everybody is bound by the same rules, whether you're doing 10,000 immunizations or you're doing 200. And basically I was told, we don't have an answer.
Wow.
So now we have another subset of individuals. And I said, this is just 10 people in my little world, in my little corner of Harris County in a 3-day weekend that I identified.
Times however many.
Yeah. As a problem. I said, I can't imagine that this isn't more problematic, not only in the state of Texas, but across the country and across the world. How are we ensuring that these people get, so now we have partially vaccinated individuals, and that brings us back to the point of, so now they're getting desperate. Now are we going to lie and say that we didn't get a first dose? So, and now I'm going to be willing to take whatever. So I got a first dose of Moderna, but you know what? I found a place that'll give me Johnson & Johnson, and two doses of something is better than one dose of anything.
As far as we know for the moment, right?
I don't have any reason to believe that the people that are in charge of these programs and processes are not well-meaning. You know, I think we all want this to succeed. I mean, the main goal is to get vaccines into people as quickly as we possibly can. And sometimes the data collection on that tends to be a little bit of an afterthought, because we're so focused on the process of rolling this out and getting this down as quickly as we can. So for instance, like had I not used the system that you had come up with as far as the registration and the data collection, there's no standardization there for us either. So it's, you come up with your own, you know, and for hospitals and things like that, it's easy because they already have scheduling programs and software and things like that. So they can use things that they already have. But for those of us that don't have that kind of stuff, you know, there's really no standard to follow other than knowing what information you need to report. Anytime you can standardize something and make it more efficient and make it the same, you know, so I'll go back to Pennsylvania as an example. When I first started an EMS in Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania is broken up into EMS council regions. I want to say there's 7 of them. Initially, when I started an EMS back in the 90s, there wasn't really a state guideline. Each region operated under similar guidelines, but I could literally drive 20 minutes south and go into a different county, which was in a different region, and give seven medications that I had no experience giving in the county that I did my training in.
Interesting.
And then they went across and standardized that stuff. You know, we manage things as they come along, right? So currently we're managing getting vaccines into people. The next hurricane that we're going to have to manage is, what do we do with all these data discrepancies?
Yep.
That's the next thing. We're not thinking about that right now because our focus is getting vaccines into people.
Yep.
and opening the economy and ending the pandemic. And then we're going to be left with this mess afterwards of having to clean up.
When I think about the amount of work that it takes to deal with a hurricane the size of Laura, right? Or Katrina. I mean, these things are monsters, right? But they still only cover a portion of the U.S. Right. Now you're talking about a hurricane the size of our country, right? And beyond. And now, you know, and potentially a transatlantic hurricane, because now you have, does the European Union want to let you in the door? Because, you know, if you don't have thorough documentation for here, so we take this hurricane analogy and all the detritus and debris that can get left behind if you don't do it right. So rather than thinking only about what that app is going to look like on your phone, we can learn and do the after action, right? I mean, when you're dealing with a hurricane and you're the eye is standing over you, what do? Right? Presumably you prepare for the next, right? The backside of the storm.
Right.
Right. So, I mean, I'm guessing, and you tell me, when you're on the ground and you've got that eye wall sitting over you, right? Are you guys taking the moment to regroup?
I mean, you're constantly looking at, and that's kind of what I've taken with this is, you're constantly evaluating your situation, and you're dealing with problems as they come up, you know. So you don't know something is a problem until you know it's a problem. And I think that's where we're at with this is, I think a lot of the people that are the decision makers with these things don't understand what kind of a problem we're having with the data collection, with people getting first doses and having difficulty getting second doses. They just assume that everything's working the way that it's supposed to, and that the places that are providing first doses are also doing seconds. I just don't think they know that it's as big of an issue, or it's going to become as big of an issue as it's going to be.
Your insights are extraordinary. When you're on the ground and you've got that eye wall sitting over you, right? Are you guys taking the moment to regroup?
You're constantly looking at, and that's kind of what I've taken with this is, you're constantly evaluating your situation, and you're dealing with problems as they come up, you know. So you don't know something's a problem until you know it's a problem. And I think that's where we're at with this is, I think a lot of the people that are the decision makers with these things don't understand what kind of a problem we're having with the data collection, with people getting first doses and having difficulty getting second doses. They just assume that everything's working the way that it's supposed to, and that the places that are providing first doses are also doing seconds. I just don't think they know that it's as big of an issue, or it's going to become as big of an issue as it's going to be.
Your insights are extraordinary. I'm going to end it there. I think that's the perfect place. Thank you. I will talk to you later. But I hope they pay attention.